Okay, so this is lesson 9, and we're calling it confining the voice. We've been talking about the voice all the time, because really the underlying is listening to the voice. So in this one, God is confining his voice in order to magnify it. And I have a little icon there of a megaphone. As you can see, to confine something actually is a way to magnify it, right? There's all sorts of things we can do that. But that's what God is actually doing here in these passages and what he's doing with Israel. So where have we come with Israel? God has already displayed himself as the great I Am. And remember, I Am means the self-existent one, the one who brings life out of death, the one who needs nothing outside of himself, and who is always I Am. He's always present, always in the present tense. There's not a past or a future with him. He's always. So he's already displayed himself as that with them. He's not confined. As they remember, he's always dealing with the people who know a certain worldview, who know what life is like in this area, in Egypt. And Egypt was really only an example of what the whole world was like, what the whole world is like. And he's shown them that he is not confined to geography or to man's appeasing, right? Or even to man's timing. He's not confined to time and space. He is more than that. And he's showed them that through all the dealings he's had with Pharaoh and the plagues, the way that he brought them through the Red Sea, the way that he put them in a place that looked absolutely impossible between the Egyptians and the sea, and then he saves them out of an impossible thing to happen in space and time, right? And yet it happens because he is beyond all that. So he's already displayed himself what he's like. And it's really important that that happened first so that they understand the bigness of this God, this so beyond what I know or even can really comprehend all of. He's so beyond that. They needed to see that first, that he wasn't like the rest of the gods, nor was he like them. Okay, so that's kind of what has happened here before we get to this point where he has them construct the temple. He's also, just before this, when they got to Mount Sinai, he has invited them into this new way of living. He's saying to them, I've got a new kingdom for you. I have a new way of living that looks so different than what you lived in before. The kingdom you lived in before was a what kind of kingdom? A transactional kingdom, where it was, I'm going to get what I need, and I'm going to trade with you to get what I need. In all sorts of ways. And it's the only way they knew how to relate. It's the only way really we know how to relate aside from God. There's going to be not only this new way of living and this new kingdom life, but there's going to be a training up of you to understand this. Just as when we encounter anything new, there's this training period, right? What do they call it? Oh, I'm trying to think of the... You know, there's a time of you've got to learn. Yeah, you got to kind of learn what's going on before, oh, okay, I can start actually doing that kind of a thing. So there will be that time of learning, and it begins with training them in fairness. And that's what the Old Covenant, the testimony, the Ten Commandments, whatever you want to call it, was all about. Is training them in fairness, what a relationship looks like that's fair. And it's very necessary first step. But it's only a first step for them to learn about relationship so that they go beyond that. He never, ever intended it to stay there. Just like as toddlers, we don't expect them to stay in the boundaries we gave them as toddlers. Right? Has anyone tried to keep their high school or college age kids in the same boundaries that they had for them as toddlers?
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't work. It's not supposed to work.
Right.
And if we think it should work because it gives us control, oh. We will...
It sounds like bondage for me, too.
Yes.
To keep track of them?
Exactly. And yet, I mean, think about things that kind of come out. Like, isn't there a new app, a GPS that you can put on your kids' phones so you can keep track of them? I mean, as soon as you said that, I thought...
You can even put it in their body.
Yeah, think about that. And you know what? There are lots of people that think that's a good idea. And really, how many of you, when you first heard that, thought, oh, that might be a good idea, right? But that's the exact same thing as treating them as a toddler, right? I'm going to keep track of them just like a toddler, but it's not going to work. It's not meant to work. Okay, so that's where we've been so far with God. So what God now needs to do is, he said, there's a new relationship here, and I'm going to tell you what a fair relationship looks like. But is it enough for us to tell someone, and this is why I had you do the tabernacle, is it enough for me to tell you or even to show you what I've built so that you know what the tabernacle is like? Is it enough? Or does it get somewhere else in your being for you to actually do it? Go through the motions. I want to see how this all comes together. And so he says, now I'm going to give you experience. I want you to see how relationship actually works. And so I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do this in a way that you can understand. So I'm going to do what we talked about at the very beginning with the question, what posture do you use with a toddler? I'm going to start where you are. I'm going to start at your level. I'm going to take what you know already, and I'm going to explode it. But I'm going to first show you what you know so that you can grasp it, so that you can understand this, so that you can go beyond it. Does that make sense? In other words, there is no way that someone would know how to have and act in a loving marriage relationship if they've never seen a loving marriage, right? If you've come from a place where a marriage is absolutely transactional, that's what you know. And someone says, well, you need to be transformational. You need to give more than you get. You need to be more than fair. What's the first reaction?
What do they look like?
How do I do that? I mean, I have no idea. Nothing comes to mind. So I'm going to give you a space where I'll start from where you are at, and then I'll gradually bring you out. Okay, so that's what he's doing with the tabernacle. And he's going to say, I'm going to give you a space you understand. So they've come out of Egypt where they know gods. And actually, this was very fascinating to me to find out that in Egypt, the gods also had homes that they dwelled in. And that's exactly what they said. Mm-hmm. All the gods have homes that they dwell in. So he's starting with what they already know. Mm-hmm. This is not unusual. And we sometimes take the Bible and we take scripture and we take it out of its historical context and we say, oh, this was so different than what they knew. No, actually, it was very similar to what they knew until a point. So this is what he's doing. Here's something you know. You know that gods have houses. I'm your God. I need a house. I want to dwell in a house here. So he has them construct this home. The different thing about the Egyptian houses, first of all, there was lots of gods, right? So there were lots and lots of god houses, is what they called them. Some of them we know as
pyramids.
Yeah, pyramids were, so they had all sorts of god houses, and pyramids actually became part of the god houses because they had to take care of the gods even when the gods died. So it was all of taking care of them. So a god, first of all, there's lots of them. Secondly, they are huge and enormous. The biggest temples in the world ever were in Egypt. The few temples that are left, I think you've been there, you've seen some of them. They're huge, right? Mm-hmm. They're bigger than the ones in Greece. They're huge.
Yeah, and they said on TV just this week on Nova that the Temple of Cheops is the biggest constructed building in the
right.
world huh. ever.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And where's that?
In Egypt.
It's
okay.
That's one of those big pyramids.
Yes.
Okay.
So the temples in Egypt, and this is why God, of course, uses Egypt as the example. There were many god houses, and they were huge, enormous, and they were amazing. But, of course, because they were huge and amazing, they couldn't do something God's temple could do. We'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. Also, the God's temples were very intricate, and they had lots of different rooms. They had secret doors in them. They had different ante rooms and hallways. There were always hallways and little spaces. So that was different than this. And thirdly, the different thing about the Egyptian god houses and this is the purpose of the god houses was to have a place to take care of the gods. So it was actually flipped from what we know. It was a place that people went to take care of the gods. And by taking care, I mean physically, tangibly taking care of them. They actually dressed the gods. They fed the gods. They washed the gods.
Like a statue?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so they actually took care of the gods. That was the point of the god houses, was it was a place that people went to take care of them. And why would they take care of the gods? To get what they want.
Right.
It was a transaction. I need to appease this god. I need to make sure he's dressed well. I need to make sure he has everything he needs for life. Lots of riches and everything. So they brought lots and lots of stuff, which is what we find in the pyramids. I need to take care of the gods even when they die, because they could do something bad to me.
Wait, what were they before they died that they were taking care of?
They were the pharaohs.
Pharaohs were some of the gods, but they were also, remember, this is an other kind of thinking. We don't think very well. We're very concrete thinkers, which actually is a detriment to us. But Egyptians, Middle Easterns aren't concrete thinkers. So a statue could be a living god. It could also be a dead god. There was all sorts of stories about that and then how they come back to life. And they believed in resurrection and so many of these things. So it usually was some kind of a statue that was a god. Couldn't be living, could be dead. The difference is that when they died, then they would put them underground in pyramids. So you know in pyramids that it's underground where all the stuff is.
But they had statues outside too.
And they had statues outside.
That's the ones that the spirit of the pharaoh when he died supposedly went into the statue and dwelt in the statue.
Right, right.
And that's why they fed the statues and dressed them. Mm-hmm.
Ah, yeah, exactly. So you see, what he does is he's beginning with what they know. They know that God have dwelling places, but for a completely different purpose, because we're going to see that this is exactly opposite of that. So he starts with what they know, and then he has them build this. And so you've built it all. You know what's here. We know that the very middle part, let's take off all the coverings here. Oh, we can't even see the roof. That. They should have had that opened.
Well, they could have made it before.
Let's take that off just so we see.
Post.
Yeah. Okay. So we know in this part, what is this called?
Holy
of Holies. And this is the mercy seat over the ark. And what's the full name of the ark?
Ark
of the Testimony. Ark of the Testimony. And then testimony covered on the same word. Okay, depending on, you know.
Would the angels be in the back or maybe in the front?
The angels actually cover the whole thing. This is just like a shadow. So if they were 3D, they cover the whole thing. Is the lid to the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, so it's not like somebody, like God is sitting.
Well, actually, that is what he's referring to is his presence is going to come there. He covers the Ark of the Covenant. He covers the covenant for us. So let's go through this really quickly. I think we've done this in covenant. We've kind of gone through this. We've done this in a couple of other things, but let's see how much we can remember from that. So the Ark of the Covenant, usually they start from that back. I want to start from here. The Ark of the Covenant holds what? Two things.
Commandments.
Are they in there?
Three things are in there.
Only two things right now, right?
There's three in there.
There's three in there, yeah. But well, and because there is eventually three in there, but for where we are. So jar of manna and the Ten Commandments. Okay. So the rod that budded, which we have in there, will come later. It hasn't happened yet. And it is intriguing. It's so intriguing. But we won't get there till Leviticus. So the rod, Aaron's rod that budded. So we have the manna. and we have the Ten Commandments. So it's called the Ark of the Covenant or the Ark of the Testimony. The testimony is the Ten Commandments. That's what they're called. What is a testimony of? Okay, that's actually the new covenant. The old covenant, what is the old covenant? What are these Ten Commandments? The laws. Mm-hmm. But what did we learn last week or the week before? Mm-hmm. What are those laws really?
Like case studies?
Well, we had the case studies of how it looks, how it's uh-huh. lived out. But what are they? What is he trying to show them?
How to be fair.
How to be fair. But not just how to be fair, how to have a relationship that's fair. This is what real relationship looks like. It starts with being fair. Right? Because what they know, and Carol brought this up last week, she said, well, don't we have relationships outside of transformational relationships? Well, we say we do. We say that relationship can be transactional. In reality, God says that's not relationship. We don't have a word for what that is, so we say that's relationship, and the same with them. And what he's saying is real relationship starts at being fair with one another, and we're never fair with one another, right? We tend to oppress one another. We talked about that. So that Ten Commandments there is a testimony to what God is bringing them to, real relationship. And it's the beginning of what real relationship looks like. Make sense? Okay, so we want it to go beyond just these rules. It's really the way that real relationship looks like. Okay, the manna. What's the manna show? Why is it there? Mm-hmm. That God is the one who gives life. He's the one who provides it. We just gather it. We just receive it. And so it's in there and it remains in there. So, and then we have the ark. And what is an ark a picture of? Salvation. The place that God keeps life for you. And then the mercy seat, what is that a picture of? God says, I will have mercy on you. I will have mercy on the fact that you break covenant. So that's why the mercy seat covers the Ark of the Testimony, you breaking that covenant of relationship. Does that make sense? I do want us to just start thinking about all the covenants, both old and new, the Ten Commandments, as a statement of relationship. Because when we don't think of it as that, when we think about it as rules to not be sinful, we completely miss the point of what God is doing. It's not to make us not sinful. It's to make us in relationship. And that will have a lot to do with what the priest does. All right, so that's the Ark of the Testimony. And then in front of the Ark of the Testimony is, before that,
the veil.
Okay. So we have a veil that separates the Ark of the Covenant from everything else. The Ark of the Covenant is the place where God's presence is going to be, and we're going to see that in later times. The veil is the place that separates everyone else from God's presence. And what did we see back in Sinai? We realized that there's a picture there already for them. What has happened way before this, where there had to be this barrier between God's presence and people?
When God was on the mountain and they couldn't touch it?
Yep, but that was a picture of actually something that happened long, 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 long time ago. Remember? Yeah, remember that the picture, and this is the one thing you always want to add to this, but the veil has cherubims on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Remember in the Garden of Eden? He has to put a flame with cherubims guarding it. This is my presence, and you have chosen not to be in it. So there's this wall now between us. When you choose not to be in relationship, there's a wall, right? And that is going to separate you from the presence because you've chosen that. All right. In front of the veil, we have what?
The incense.
The altar of incense, which is a representative of?
Prayer.
So this is conversation with God. God says, I'm willing to be in conversation with you all the time. I'm willing. And what is conversation really representative of?
Relationship.
Relationship, right. Relationship. We have to our, when you come into the right, you have the table of showbread, which is God saying, I'm going to provide you with food. This is not for him to eat. Now, do you see what he's doing with them? He's saying, you know God's this way. I'm completely different. In my house, I have things to provide for you rather than you providing for me. This table of showbread is to show you I am your provision for food. I will give you food. And to the left, we have the lampstand. I will be the one to give you light for your way, direction. So all of these, the pieces of furniture in there, are pictures of God saying, this is what I'm giving you. And you think about this, how they would have, they start with, oh yeah, this is what gods are like. But for them to all of a sudden realize, but this God is giving to us. And we're slaves. And we're people who don't want a relationship with you. I mean, we've said it a million times just from the Red Sea on. And God says, see, this is what relationship is like. I'm going to give to you. Not because you deserve it. And I'm not going to give to you so that you give back to me. I'm just going to give to you. Do you see what he's doing? He's slowly giving them an experience of a God who's transformational, of a God who gives. So that's all in the holy place, in the Holy of Holies. Outside of there, we have the basin to wash in. And he says, I'm going to give you opportunity to wash daily. I'm going to, everything I say will cleanse you. Because remember, the washing is a picture of the word, of God's word. So everything I say is going to cleanse you. And remember, the whole underlying theme of this is listening. So this listening is for our good so that we get clean. And then, of course, we have the altar, which is the place that all the sacrifices come. And it's the first thing that the people see. Remember here, oh, and then we have the door, the door, which is large and lots of people can come through it. As opposed to the separation here, there's a little door in front of the holy place and the Holy of Holies, no door. Okay, we have all the pieces. Oh, and the outer thing is all done in linen. And as we saw here, linen was a very rough. It's not, we think of linen as like the soft, smooth, and we even call it Egyptian linen, which I think is kind of funny. At the time, it would have been a rough weave, and it really is plain, just very plain. You know, no dyes or anything, just very plain outside here. So this is different too, because all the gods in Egypt would have had these magnificent god houses. They would have been beautiful from the outside, and here, the beauty is where? In the inside, completely covered with skins, with all different skins on the roof there. The other very essential thing here that is so different than the Egyptian god houses is the fact that it's portable. All of those god houses, like Pat said, the hugest buildings that ever have been made by man, they can't move. They stay in one place. All the gods stayed in one place. And remember, God has already said, I am a God who is not in one place. I'm everywhere. But here's the thing. I'm going to meet you where you're at. So I am going to be a God who moves with you, who goes with you wherever you're at. On your whole journey through the wilderness, I'm going to go with you. My presence is going to be with you. So completely different. But he starts out showing them what they know, and then he expands this. And he's going to expand it more and more as we see the different layers that we've talked about. So what's the purpose? What God is saying, the purpose is, this is a place where they can meet with God. Most fascinating definition of meet, though. That meet word actually means to meet, to come together, to make a time or place for marriage. That's actually what the word means. To come to a place so that you can set a time and a date for marriage. This is the purpose of them having constructed the tabernacle. So you can come, and so we can say we're betrothed. We are in a relationship, and we are going toward And this is what he does. Your goal is not the promised land. Your goal is marriage with me. That's the goal. This is all this is about. We're setting up for that marriage.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. Where does that word come from? Mm.
The word meet, to meet with.
And it says that in the
that's,
that chapter you're saying?
Yeah, he says, when they're so involved, I don't put all those things out.
Yeah.
What verse is it? There's a verse that says, I think it's in 20, I want to say 25, that he says, if somebody can find that, it's toward the end of the chapter. I can see it in my head.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, no problem, no problem. No, that's actually it. And that is, that's really important that you do know that it does actually say that in there.
22. And there I will meet with you.
Okay.
And from above the mercy seat.
25:22. And 29 what?
29:43.
Okay.
Now, it makes so much sense why there's such an attack on marriage.
Well, yeah.
It's such a mockery of what God intended.
Yes.
And if you don't have a clear picture
right.
of what God intended.
Yep. So you can see all of this. Remember, the whole idea that God has always had is to restore what he intended. And his intention has always been intimate relationship, two into one relationship. And it's what he's doing here. And what he's doing is schooling them in that in a very step-by-step way so that they can get it. Because when I say that, you know, let's say you meet someone who doesn't know anything about Christ, doesn't know anything about God, and you say, you know, God wants this intimate relationship. What are you going to do? You have to show them. What do you mean by that? Well, you know marriage. Let's start with something you know. You know what marriage looks like. And maybe they don't. Maybe they know what transactional marriage looks like. So you have to start where they are before they can understand what it is. But it is what God is restoring us to. It is, and since that's what it is, it's also a place that God can dwell. Because if he's coming for relationship with you to be one, then it's a place that he can dwell, that he can remain. And dwell means to permanently remain here, that he can always be there. It's a place that will travel with them. So that marriage isn't just, the relationship isn't just for Sunday mornings. The relationship isn't just for from 8 to 8:15 in the morning, your devotional time, right? Marriage, the relationship, is for all the time. And then we begin to understand better some of the New Testament things where it says, pray without ceasing. Does it really mean to not stop talking to him? Or does it mean to be in constant conversation as you are with your husband?
And that this whole lesson about the Sabbath, that's what I got out of that. It's like every day is a Sabbath.
Every day, yes.
I loved that chapter.
So there's this whole thing. He's trying to show them relationship by bringing it down to their level. Does that make sense? We're going down so they understand this. Yeah. I do believe they understood the symbolism that all of these pieces represented God. I mean, they would have understood that because that was a part of what they knew. They would understand that, and they would begin to understand as they went through what happens in there, that all of this wasn't for God, but for them. So they would begin to understand it by experience. Okay, so they would not, and this is, remember, it's the best teacher is, let me walk you through it rather than just tell you. Because I can tell you, and this is the frustrating part of being a teacher, I can tell you all this, and it's theory. And it's not going to do you a bit of good. You've got to enter it. You've got to walk in it. And then, Carol and I were talking this morning, it isn't until you go through some horrendous thing that says, tear down everything you knew and start from fresh so that you start to walk through, oh, it's really about relationship. It really isn't about walking through this list I have. Mm-hmm. So, with them, same thing.
Okay.
And actually, when you really think about it, none of this is fair.
Absolutely.
I mean, the very thing that they said was a burden and was hard, it's just not fair what he does for us.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, exchange is exactly. So and there isn't even an
right.
exchange.
That, and that's the whole point is he's showing, yeah. I'm going to show you that relationship is always more than fair. Real relationship, what God calls relationship, is always more than fair. It always goes beyond what's equal and equitable. And this is why he's showing this, and so that they can start to experience that. By the way, this is the first time in Scripture that tabernacle is mentioned. And any time a word is mentioned for the first time, it's always really the essence of it, the definition of it. And so we begin to see that the idea of tabernacle, the idea of dwelling, tabernacle and dwell are the same word, the idea of that is relationship, intimate, two-in-one relationship. And so we have to start thinking about that because we are so concrete. We take that and we go, okay, so we need to build churches that are God houses. It is what we've done, right? And so now that we have something concrete, now it's I go to church. Now it's there's a place that I can go and worship. Do you see where I'm going here? And God's saying, no, right? Go back to the beginning. What is tabernacle about? What is it about? It's about relationship. You and me dwelling as one. And so we'll get there as we go through the levels. He gives them this space that they can understand. And then, you know, he just starts pulling out. Yeah, it's a little bit more than you even know. And he shows the transformational ways. But then he also gives them priests, which they also know about. They know about priests that go in and they give the gods what they need. And they do the dressing and they do the feeding of God, and they take care of the gods. And it goes very beyond things that we would imagine priests doing. And I think we know. I mean, there were temple prostitutes and things, and that was all for the appeasement of the gods. That's what they needed. So we have a priest, and he gives them a priest. And here's the cool thing. What he does is God chooses the priest, and he chooses Aaron and Aaron's sons. But Aaron and his sons are no different than anyone else. And what God is saying is, I'm going to choose one of you. And what were all of you before? You were all slaves. I'm going to choose a slave to be a priest. That would not have happened in Egypt. These slaves never would have been able to be a priest. But God says, I'm going to choose one of you so that I will give you a face you can recognize, a face you can understand. Just like I gave you a space that you can understand, I'm going to give you a face you can understand. So I'm going to choose out of you some that can be priests. Now we're talking about just Aaron and his sons here. When we get into Leviticus, we'll talk about all of the Levites, which are the rest of the clan. He clothes the priest in beauty. And so he clothes them in a tunic, which is the white linen garment. A tunic basically is your undergarments. A robe, which goes over that. A sash, which puts the robe together. And then we have the ephod. Just think of it as an apron. An ephod is basically an apron. And then the breastplate, which is attached to the ephod and to the shoulders. And the breastplate has the 12 stones on it. And then we have the turban or the hat. So that's what he clothes the priests in. And this is really where I want us to look even more than the tabernacle, but we'll look at both in the third layer. He clothes them. Those who were slaves, they are now beautiful in this beautiful royal stuff, in beautiful tapestries and blues and purples and reds. And there's so much we could talk about, but I think we'll talk more about it in Leviticus. But there's this beautiful stuff. I love the fact that they have on the bottom, they have pomegranates and bells, pomegranates and bells, pomegranates and bells. And I started thinking about the pomegranates and Oh, just the fact that there's pomegranates is an amazing thing about all the seeds that are in there. And they're full of staining red stuff just everywhere. I mean, it's beautiful symbolism. But what they would have known is this is a reflection of God. God is beautiful, and he's putting it on a slave, a servant, someone who's not worthy. He's putting it on this beauty. But it's not just to reflect God. It's also for them to enjoy it. God is a God who wants us to enjoy what he's made and what he's given. And so it's for glory and for beauty. It's for both, to reflect and to enjoy. So we have all these pieces. Hopefully we'll do more of that later. But let me go on just on two pieces. He's got to put the apron on, the ephod on. It's attached with two stones, two onyx stones, one on each shoulder. One has six names of the tribes of Israel and the other six names of the tribe of Israel. And what he's saying is the priest will always carry the Israelites. He will carry the burden of who they are, that they are slaves, that they are people who have chosen not to have a relationship. He'll always carry that. And then we have the breastplate with all the 12 tribes, and it's covering his heart. And basically what that is the priest will be the identity. They're taking on the identity of Israel, of all of them, collectively and individually. So the priest says, I'm going to be the one who will take on the identity of the people. I am the one who looks like the people, who is everything that the people are. All of the sin the people are, all of the desire not to have a relationship, I'm taking that on. The priest is taking that on. So there's this, wow, the priests get to have this cool job. Well, it's a cool job, except it's heavy. It's heavy because they are the ones who take in Israel into the Holy God. And so we will look at that in a second. Who's going to give me my blood? Somebody. You will? Yes.
I'll get the pin.
Yeah, get the pin. And prick her.
She can prick her. Or
you can. Yeah, next week I might ask for more blood. So I actually.
We have such the blood banks are extremely low. Yeah. So
there we go.
And give your donation.
There we go. Okay, so there's a ceremony that the priests go through. The priests go through washing, they go through dressing, and then they go through anointing. And they're not doing that themselves. Do you know who's doing it to them? Who's washing them? Who's dressing them? Moses is. And do you remember who Moses is the representative of?
God.
Yeah, remember he said to Moses, you will be God, and Aaron will be the priest to me. Mm-hmm. Remember? So Moses is God here, and Moses washes them, Moses dresses them, Moses anoints them, Moses offers the sacrifices for them. Okay, so he washes, he dresses, and he anoints them. And he anoints them with blood. So do you, go ahead, prick. And I want you... I want you to...
I can't prick myself.
No, it's hard.
Is it?
Why was the heart fart?
Do it. Yeah, someone else has to do it too.
Well, let me try to
if
do it.
If she wasn't on a recorder, I'd tell you a really funny story.
Okay, I want you to squeeze it out a little. We certainly need a lot more blood than that.
Uh-oh.
I didn't prick your
heart. There
Where
we go.
Put it?
And I want you to put it up. Can you put it on his ear there?
Yeah.
Now, if you get more, I want you to just put it all over his clothes.
I didn't prick your heart.
No, I guess not. Too tough. Is that enough?
Okay, that's good. That's good. Oh, good. Oh, good.
Which one?
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect. Put some on his sleeve here so we can see it. Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. I'm going to pass him around because
she got to sprinkle it on the horns and the altar.
We need more blood.
No, we're good. I really want you to have a visual of the beautiful clothes with blood all over them, because they will always have blood all over them. So I want you to just take a look at the blood. Be careful, it's still fresh. I don't want you to get it all over you. Thank you very much, Eileen. I appreciate that. So as Moses would anoint them, the reason he anointed them was that they were to be separated for God. Now remember, they have the identity of Israel, so they are Israel, and everyone says, oh, that's me, and they're to be separated for God. But where are they separated from? It's always a two-part. Do you know what they're separated from? If they've taken on Israel's identity, what have they separated themselves from? Mm-mm. And see, that this is where we always, go.
From this
or
that? No. From the world. From the other people. From their old life.
Okay, you're getting close.
From sin.
Well, and really, what is sin is the priest is being separated from himself. Mm-hmm. I am, and this is why he has blood all over him. I am separated from myself. I am dead to self. I am now willing to take on the identity of someone else, of Israel. I am dead to myself. I'm no longer, my life is no longer going to be a self-centered, all about me. This is what the priest is. This is this priest of, I'm willing to take on Israel's identity and let go of my own identity. Does this make sense? So a priest's job was very different than I think what we think. We think it's this, I get to be great. I get to be, boy, I'm better than everyone. And this is really how we even view today our priests and our ministers, right? We kind of put them up here. When really the whole point of a minister and a priest is, I am you. I am you. I am not myself. It is not about me anymore. Because remember, this is all a picture of what kind of relationship God is talking about. A relationship where life is not about me as the center. Mm-hmm. And so the priest stands there with blood on him all the time. And not just the anointing blood that begins the separation that says, I have said no to myself. It's going to be about me being identified with Israel and then me communing with God. But he's going to have blood on him all the time. Lots of blood.
That's why they're chosen. You don't want to be.
Well,
I think we do think that. Because I'm listening to you saying, oh, it's this great job. I think that's one perspective. I think the other perspective is it's a job. It's the role that they played. They got chosen to play that role. Other tribes played other roles. And so I think you tend to think of that. You know, my brother's pastor.
Mm-hmm.
It's his job,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what he's chosen to do
mm-hmm.
with his life.
Yeah.
But that's not exactly true.
No.
Something compels him far deeper than this is his job.
Right.
And but I think that it's easy to think about this as this is what they did
right.
all day long. This
right.
is their job.
Right. And we're going to go even deeper than that. So do you understand the priest's position is a very different position than we, I think, normally think about it as. Moses goes ahead and anoints them with the blood, first on the right ear and on the right thumb and on the right toe. The right ear says, everything I listen to will be dedicated to God. I am dedicated to listening to God's voice. Not my voice, because I'm dead to hearing my voice, this ear. So I would love it if you actually put a little piece of blood on your ear and said, I'm dedicated not to listening to my voice. Well, that's not fair to me, but God's voice. And then he puts it on their thumb because everything they do is dedicated to God and not to themselves. And to the right toe is everywhere they go is dedicated to God and not where they want to go. but where God wants them.
Wow, this puts a whole different spin on the scripture that we're a royal priesthood.
Yep, and that's where we're going. That's the third level. Yes, very, very different. So we have this blood on the right ear, the right thumb, the right toe, covering then the clothing. He sprinkles the clothing with the blood and the oil mixed together, sprinkled all over him. And then, of course, as we go into Leviticus, we'll see how bloody a job it is. And then there's the offerings that Moses makes on their behalf. And the first offering is a bull offering, and we will get very much into offerings, but know that the bull offering is a sin offering. And so with a sin offering, the flesh of the bull is always taken outside of the camp because it represents sin. Ah, the flesh represents sin. Mm-hmm. Myself represents sin. My flesh is what I want, is that life that lives centered, self-centered. That's killed, and the flesh is taken outside, and it's completely gone. So it's all burnt up. And that's a payment. So Moses basically gives this offering as a payment for all of Israel, and the priest being the representative, for all of Israel eschewing relationship. For all Israel saying, no, I want to be in the center of my life. It's all about me. And that's the sin. So whenever we think about sin, it isn't the moral failures that is the problem. The moral failures that we have are the symptom mm-hmm. of the fact that we have a skewed relationship with God. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. This is one of those essentials. If we don't understand that, we will try to conform to the commandments. We will try to conform to, I will not sin here. I will not swear. I will not murder. I will not... When God says, that's all great, but those are manifestations of what's inside. And I want to get to what's inside. And so every offering, every sin offering, notice that the sin offerings are always an offering of flesh. It's not, well, today I lied, so I'm going to bring in a note that says I will not lie. And yesterday I hit someone, and so I'll bring in a picture of my hand and I won't do that. Does that make sense? There's nothing different. All the sins, there's no level. People don't say, well, because you lied and you murdered, you have to bring in a bigger bull. It's just a bull. It's flesh. It's you lived for yourself. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. This is so essential, guys. This is one of those places that we have skipped over and not realized. And so our Christian life, we think, is to manage the symptoms, right? And you know, as I'm dealing with all of Liz's health problems and how the doctors just want to manage symptoms, it's so frustrating because you want to go, is someone going to get down to the core of what's wrong, right? Mm-hmm. But it's much easier to manage symptoms, or at least it seems to be. Mm-hmm. But it means it never ends, mm-hmm. which is, of course, what we're going to see in Leviticus.
That's why we die.
Yeah. Yep.
We just give up.
Yep.
It's just too much.
Right, right. So this is what he's doing with the bull offering. And we'll talk more about the offerings in Leviticus. And then we have two rams. And we have the first ram get sacrificed. And that is sacrificed for a whole burnt offering. We'll talk about offerings. But a whole burnt offering means it all gets eaten up in the flames. It completely gets eaten up in the flames, which means that is God's portion. Because the second ram offering, it's left for the priest to eat. That's their portion. And they get to eat it. And I'm going to explain explain this now. The second ram offering actually includes two, it's the same ram, but they do two different things with it. This is so cool. They give it as a wave offering and a heave offering. A wave offering is this way. They wave the piece of meat across like this. And basically it's saying, as man, as Israel, as each individual, I have been going to and fro on my own way. This is what I'm doing. I'm just going to and fro on my own way. But now I know that everything I have is from God and is given back to God. I get it from God, and I'll give it back to God. And that's the heave offering. So we have the wave offering, and then they give the heave offering. It's, no, I know that everything I have is from God, and I'm going to give everything back to God. You see that? What picture does it make?
The first ram sacrifice, it almost, when you were talking about it, was consumed.
It is consumed. It is. The first ram offering is consumed because it's God's.
Consumed by fire, not by man.
Yes, consumed by fire.
Oh, I know, but you said it's the same ram.
No, the second ram. Okay. The second ram has two
places.
Right, because it's all God's. The second one has the wave and the heave.
She meant there's it's the same ram, the second one that does both things.
Yes, that does the wave and the heave. Yeah. Okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice what the heave and the wave offering together look like? And so we have the heave and the wave offering. And what comes after all this offerings? They sit down and eat. God has eaten his portion because it's been consumed, and they get to eat. And what do we know about eating? It's a covenant meal here. They have now said, blood all over me. I'm dying to self. I am no longer about me. I want everything that I have to be brought back to God. I'm completely dedicating. They have now been reconciled to God, and they can come together and eat a meal together as one. And so we have the meal.
It's just not fair.
What's the purpose then of the priest? Three things. The priest is to represent the people before God. They are to take on Israel's identity, be the one willing to come before God, honestly presenting their self. I am a person, I am people who have chosen to live for me rather than relationship with you. I've chosen this. This is sin. This is what I've done, and I'm going to come before you and say, this is who I am. I am Israel before you. So a priest is to represent. I am a people. I am a person. I am one who is chosen to not have relationship. But now I want relationship. And so a priest also is there to reconcile man to God, to restore relationship by offering his dead self, which is why the priest always has blood on him.
If he wasn't covered with blood, though, mm-hmm. he went into the Holy of Holies, is that part of he'll burn?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because I can't go in. I cannot say to God, God, I want a relationship with you. But I do want to be in control.
I
want to be the center. God says, no. It cannot happen. You cannot come into a relationship. The same thing with marriage. You cannot enter into a marriage and say, I am going to make sure I have my own life. And that's what, see, we have these things that we call marriages, and we have these things that we call relationship, and it isn't, because it is not two people coming to be one. Does that make sense? This is what God is doing with the priesthood. I mean, it's beautiful, and if we don't understand that, we don't understand our role.
Just a communion meal, even with so much richer,
yes.
Knowing this,
yes.
Prior to.
Yes, exactly. So, we have all that. So we have, he's to represent Israel. He's to reconcile man, Israel, to God by presenting him his dead self. And that's so key, to present his dead self to him. And then to intercede for man, to have a conversation constantly going, to give the activity of relationship. So that's the priest's purpose here. So this is what God does is, I'm showing you, I'm going to have you start participating in what relationship really looks like. It's really different than what you think it is. And so he has that. So this is our first layer. This is what we see. Of course, we go into the New Testament, and we know that there's a second layer. That all of this represented another space and another face that not we could just understand, but that we could relate to. And of course, that's Christ. And so we know that each piece of the tabernacle is a picture of Christ. And so we know from the beginning in that Jesus is the tabernacle. that Jesus is the space we can relate to. He is the door that we enter into relationship with. He is the sacrifice that gives a dead self for us, that kills us and gives us a new life. He is the water that washes us. His words give us cleanliness. He is the bread of life. He is the light of the world. He is the one who constantly is in front of God interceding for us, saying, giving us opportunity for relationship all the time, for this activity of relationship. He is the one who keeps the covenant for us, gives us mercy when we haven't kept it. And he's the presence of God himself. So the second level is, I'm going to make this even so you understand even better, in a person that you can relate to. Now it's not just that you can understand, but a person you can relate to. Does that make sense? And what he's done is he has brought divinity clothed in humanity by the picture of the temple, by Christ being that. And of course, Jesus moves among, and I love the fact that we have Jesus, we can relate to him knowing he's just like us. He's got a face like us, he sleeps like us, he eats like us. He actually even moves around like us. He actually moves. He actually has this vitality that can move, and he relates to all sorts of people. And so we see him eating with all sorts of people, don't we? Once you begin to think about what that priest does and what Christ is doing in his life, it becomes a little more amazing to us.
Well, there's also the other layer that he dwells within us, and tabernacles.
That's a third layer. Yeah. Yep. So, what did we say tabernacle is? It's the place where God meets for what?
Relationship.
For relationship. To set a time and a place for marriage, right? Jesus is the tabernacle. He's the bridegroom, right? He's the place. Oh, here's the bridegroom. Remember an arranged marriage? When you meet for setting a time and a place, it's always, here's the one I've arranged for you to marry. This is what's going to give you life, this marriage relationship. And so we get to meet Jesus here. Jesus also the high priest. This is Hebrews, what we're going to do in the fall. We're going to see the magnificence of Jesus as the high priest. Not just a space we can relate to, but a face we can relate to. Chosen to do God's will. Jesus will say this of himself. And I'm not going to go too deep into this because we'll do so much of it in Hebrews. But Jesus is divinity clothed in humanity. Jesus endured the ceremony of being washed, dressed, anointed, and then he offered the one offering, and the offering was accepted by Christ, and that is what the resurrection is. I hope people understand that. The resurrection is God saying, I take this. Yep, this it has been reconciled. Now I can eat with you.
I remember learning that Christ during in the upper room when he's giving the cup and all that, he is giving a marriage proposal by
yes.
the third cup.
Yep, yep. That's exactly what it is.
And I just can't believe they had that language there that said,
yes. Yeah. Isn't that? I mean, what I'm telling you is, this is always what God's all about. But when we narrow it down to concrete things and rules, we lose the richness of what God's doing and the fact that it's all about relationship and that that's really the core issue. It isn't the moral failures. Those are symptoms. And you know, we can say, okay, I am not going to lie. That's just going to be part of me. I'm just not going to lie. But it doesn't matter. It's the core. What matters is, in fact, for you to say that immediately tells you you haven't dealt with the core, because you said it's about me. I'm going to do this. The life is about me controlling. And so we have these pictures and these beautiful fulfillments of what God is doing in Christ. So we have him as the priest, that he represents man. He takes on our identity. He says, I'm going to go before God and be you. I am going to take the burden on of being you. On my shoulders and in my heart, I'm going to be you. Completely open and honest about who that is. I'm going to reconcile. I'm going to take away the barrier by dying, by causing you to die. And so it gets burst forth with blood. And he takes away that barrier. And then Jesus intercedes because he's always asking for interaction with God. His intercession is always this. There's a constant conversation for us to enjoy, for us to have the activity of relationship. So obviously there's lots in there. I think we've all kind of gone through that, but we'll do more of that in Leviticus. I want to get to the third level because I think this is the portion where it explodes things and that we so often miss. And I don't want us to miss this. Remember, the whole thing of Exodus is saying there's a lot of layers here. Look underneath. It's not just what's happening on the surface, this building of this tabernacle. And it's not even happening what's the response to that, this fulfillment of that. There's a more fulfillment than, don't stop at the tabernacle saying, well, it's a picture of Christ. If you stop there, you completely lose what God is trying to do. And his whole goal is to get you in a relationship with him. And in relationship, you become one with Christ. And if I'm one with Christ, it means I'm the tabernacle. It means I'm the priest. And I do the things that these things do. It comes out of me when I'm one with Christ. So what's God been saying here? God all along has been saying, the great I am is willing to be confined to a small box with skin on it in order to have relationship, to meet you where you're at so that you come and meet me. And if that's what he's saying here, and that's what he even said in Christ, then he says, are you, first of all, willing to be the box? Are you willing to be the place that I'm going to be confined to? Now, do you understand why God had to start with, I am the great I am. I am beyond all of this. And this is also why I wanted us to do this. Even in our perspective, this is nothing. It's paper, and I can burn it up in a second, and it's little. And the great God I am says, I'm willing to be confined to this. I'm willing to be confined to that. I'm willing to come to your level. Are you willing? Are you willing to let me be inside of you? Are you willing to be the box? Because if you're willing to be the box, then I get to explode you, and I get to make you big. I get to tear it out so that you become part of me. This is the exciting piece of what God is doing, even as he teaches Israel.
And it's grace, right?
Absolute grace.
I was going to say this at the beginning. Just like in my business world, if I choose to meet somebody where they're at,
yep,
versus pursue,
yep,
or push my agenda,
yep,
whether they know it or not, that's a sacrifice for me. That's
right.
Great. Right? I got things to
right.
do. I got a deadline. Mm-hmm. Chop, chop, people.
Yep.
Let's go. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have the ability to be that person. Mm-hmm. That's not a very nice person, by the way. But it's grace. I'm extending grace, whether
yep.
they recognize it as such or not. When I come to them in humility and meet them where they're at
yep.
in order to have a relationship mm-hmm. to accomplish what needs to be done.
Yep.
But my job is to teach them what the future might look like.
Right. And as God did, he didn't say, okay, everybody, now sit down and I'm going to tell you what it's like. He said, come on in. I'm going to give you what it's like. I'm going to give you more than fair. I'm not going to teach you in the ways that we think, not didactic. I'm going to overwhelm you with the gifts that I have. So, and we're going to get a little deeper, but tabernacle, I get to be the tabernacle. And God is asking that. God has been saying, will you hold me inside of you so that you get to know me intimately and can reflect, like all the gold inside, all here, If you knew what, if you actually walked inside this, this would be so bright. One light in there, but because of all the gold, it just bounces light everywhere. And so he says, are you willing to be the box that I'm going to be confined to? I'm willing to be confined. That's a big deal. Big God is willing to be confined in this stuff that's nothing that he made. So, me as a tabernacle. By the way, this is, and he says this in Exodus, in this portion, he says, this is why I've delivered you. For you to have relationship with me, to be as one, so that you can be the tabernacle, so that you can be the priest, so that you can be one with me and be able to give transformationally. This is how a transformational life works. Me as the tabernacle, this is a new space we can be. So he's given us a space we can understand. He's given us a space we can relate to. And now he says, you can actually be that space. I'm giving you that space because I'm going to be you. You are going to give yourself up in death. Once you allow me to be inside you as the box, I will explode you. And this is also this picture of blood all over. It's like we've been, I am no longer needing to be this contained, controlled, inside of rules person. Because he lives in me, he wants to come in me so he can explode me, so it's beyond me.
Does this think of our heart being circumcised?
Yes, you know, exactly. That's exactly what it is. This circumcised heart, this blood all over me. I am no longer just me. It's no longer just me in the center. It's God in the center. Do you see this? It's this reverse. I'm going to be small so you can be big.
But that's why the heart stuff.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
He's trying to get the Egypt out of us.
Exactly.
And
explode
it's a great
the self.
Exchange.
Yeah.
It's not fair. It's more than fair.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's this beautiful picture that when we enter into that place that is Christ, that place that the Israelites got to see, that I'm basically saying, I'm going to meet you for that marriage ceremony. I am going to accept that invitation that you've made to be your bride. And then he will graciously fill me with himself. And of course, he says, I'm willing to be contained. But once I'm contained, I am going to just try exploding you and no longer be in there. So I am a tabernacle. And the New Testament attributes this, or affirms this constantly. Do you not know that you are a temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? Your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. You are not your own. Mm-hmm. Now does that look different? You're not your own. Yeah, what was the tabernacle? It wasn't a place for God to be, God's needs to be met, but what?
Our needs to be met.
Right. The tabernacle was God saying, I want to meet your needs. And if I'm the tabernacle, it's not about God meeting my needs. He's already done it. He's filled me. If I'm the tabernacle, it's life, true relationship is me being able to meet others' needs.
And justice flows.
And this is exactly why we can have this. What does God, the Lord require of you? To do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly. This is being the tabernacle, and then, of course, being the priest. First Peter, you are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood. So I can be a door. I can refresh others with the word. I can nourish them with his words. I can give them light. I can do everything that the tabernacle does. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So do you see what a danger it is if we stop at Christ as the fulfillment?
Mm-hmm.
If we stop at that, we are still lost. It's still, God has not been inside of us and broken the box. Because there's still this Christ, me.
Well, it's still a transaction.
It's still a transaction.
Jesus died, I'm a sinner, I accept that gift, done.
Right.
Transaction.
And then
right.
I get this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
which has never been the goal.
No.
It's just never been the goal. So we look at that, but God also says, I'm willing to daily live as you, in the mess, relating to you in the midst of death. I'm the priest. I've been willing to do that. Are you willing to be opened up, to be vulnerable and expanded to a reality that isn't just about you? Where relationship means you aren't in control. What God says relationship is not you being in control and somebody else being in control and you two trying to mesh that. Because it doesn't work. Relationship. What do you say, Karen?
I really like it in the mess, because even as I was going through that whole blood thing, uh-huh. I had the picture of the priest and stuff, it's like, there's blood everywhere. And I'm just like, yeah.
Everywhere. You know? In the mess. And a priest is the one willing to live in the mess. And remember, this mess is not just ugly and staining. It's smelly.
Yeah.
It's blood stains. Ugh. And the priest is willing to live in that mess all the time. And so he says, are you willing to be there? Are you willing to be me to others? Are you willing to take on their identity, mm-hmm. carry their burden of sin? And what is sin again? Eschewing relationship. That is as concise a definition as we can get. Eschewing relationship. Are you willing to take that on for them and bring it to me? Are you willing to do these things? I have a new face I can be. I can be common, but I'm endowed with royalty. Because I've allowed Christ to live in me, because he has contained himself, willing to contain himself within me. And he chose me, and he clothes me with his righteousness, and he baptizes me with washing and dressing me in his death. And his death is our death, that death to living as if self is the center. And I've died to myself, letting him be in control. A relationship is always giving up control, right? It's why relationships are always tricky, because relationship means, okay, I cannot any longer control what happens here. I can try, right? And the relationship really gets a mess. If I'm trying to control you, it doesn't work. There's two different people here, and it's not going to work with you being in control. And I've eaten of the covenant meal he provided. I am his by adoption. And if I am Christ by adoption, I am a son, right? It says that we are sons. And so who are the priests? Who are the high priests? All of the Levites? Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Who are the high priests?
Just Aaron's sons.
And if the high priest is Christ and I'm Christ's son, I am in that position. Mm-hmm. I am in the same position as this high priest was, to be taking on the identity of others. So I'm a priest. You are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out. Looking at that now in context of Exodus, he called us out of Egypt, right? And it says they're out of darkness, which was Egypt. So that we could proclaim the excellencies. And how do we proclaim the excellencies? But by being a priest for others. That's how we proclaim the excellency. It is not by telling them, here's the rules to follow, follow them and you got it.
Well, it's really a being a transformed life.
Exactly. Which is exactly what a priest did. He was transformational. He gave more than what was fair. He gave his whole life, dying to himself, to face God, to face the consequences, and then to ask God to be reconciled. So I can represent others. I can take on their identities. I can take their burdens. I can feel with them. Does that make sense? So if I never am able to put myself in their place, to be on their level, if ever in my head I say, I look at someone and their life looks messy, if I ever say in my head, hopefully never outward, but hopefully never inward, that would never happen to me. I would never do that. You are not a priest. You're not acting as a priest. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Because a priest says, oh, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's me. Mm-hmm. And what happens then with relationship when I say to you, oh, yeah, that's me? Mm-hmm. What happens? You have just given them a face that they can relate to. Mm-hmm. You have given them a place they can be. Oh, really? You've allowed, I'm on the same level as you. I am no different. This is the us of the kingdom.
What reminds me of the Beatitudes.
Exactly. Yes. We are all us. And the priests are, that's exactly what the whole point of the priesthood is and why we are appointed to be priests. Not so that we could say, I am great. I got it. I know what I needed to do. Because the priest didn't do anything to get this position. He was chosen. He was dressed. He was clothed. He was reconciled. Not by his own doing, but by Moses here, by Christ. I can also reconcile others to Christ. I can have that meeting. I can bring that. And we'll see. I mean, Christ even says that. And we can intercede for others. Romans says, present your bodies as living and holy sacrifices. Now, in the context of being a priest, that makes a lot of sense now. Present your bodies as living and holy sacrifices. This is how someone presents a living sacrifice, by being a priest, by taking on others' identity, by reconciling them with God, by the way that you live with them. acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. That's what worship is, for you to be a priest. Not for you to sing songs, not for you to go to a place and say, this is what I do. Your spiritual service of worship is being a priest. 2 Corinthians, this is a fantastic. For the love of Christ controls us. This is priests. Love of Christ controls us. Now, having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died, and he did for all, that they who live should no longer live for themselves. Give up your self-centered life, your transactional life, but for him who died and rose again on their behalf. Therefore, if any man is in Christ, if you've died and you've been the box and you've allowed him in, then you are a new creature. You are now a priest. The old things have passed away, and behold, new things have come. Now all these things are from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. We are the priests who reconcile others to God. And we do it through putting on Christ, through putting on his character, his heart, by allowing him to live in us and allowing him to explode us, allowing him to just burst open that self-centered life, that transactional life. And when he does so, what comes out is a heart of compassion, a heart of kindness, a heart of humility, a heart of gentleness, a heart of forgiveness, and most of all, a heart of love. That's what a priest looks like. This character of God that pours out of him, so that when he meets someone, he says, I'm gonna be on your level. I am on your level. I am you. I get it. And so I'm going to come with you on this journey. So this is what the new kingdom is all about. This is what he's talking about. Interesting thing, in Egypt, they actually had things called the old kingdom, the middle kingdom, and the new kingdom. Because the world will always try to, oh, I can do that. I can do that. I can put on a false new kingdom. And God's showing this new kingdom works so completely differently. You got to experience it. So how then is God's confined voice magnified? By his temple, me, his temple's veil being ripped open so that others might have access. That means it's often a painful life of vulnerability in order to give others a space they can relate to. So now, absolutely, that's exactly what it is. So when the veil was ripped, and we know it was a picture of Christ's body being ripped open so that people could have access to God, it's the same for us. If we're his tabernacle, it means we allow God to rip us open, to be vulnerable and transparent so that they get to see God. Does that make sense? Because mm-hmm. if I'm never vulnerable, I'm never ripped open, all they see is me controlling, me being able to be good. Mm-hmm. If you're a tabernacle, you are willing to be ripped open and willing to be, man, I'm a mess, and you get to see God in it.
You know, what I'm having to remember is that this isn't just a short-term project. We
yep.
love short-term projects.
Yes, exactly.
And this is like a lifetime thing. And I get weary.
Well,
being
yes.
this vulnerable person or just constantly
mm-hmm.
being the priest
mm-hmm.
over
constantly
and over.
Being dying to self.
Dying to self, yes.
And they're not responding the way I want them to. And
mm-hmm.
you know, you think, and maybe it's the whole transactional thing, you know, there should be a change sometime
yep.
along the way here.
Yep.
I've done an awful lot, and still nothing.
When
and
am I going to get more love than I deserve?
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you've done, is you've gone back to, I'm going to live transactionally.
Right.
And actually, when you're weary and dying, often that's a, am I trying to live in transaction
mm-hmm.
here? And we all will be there constantly, right? Constantly. It will be tiring. But when Christ says, take my burden on. I'm the high priest and my burden is to have identity with others. It's not heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's when you try to be transactional that it's heavy.
Well, if you're constantly being given over to death, it doesn't mean that you... It's like that's just what you are. You don't have to put a face on
yes.
it or cloak it. It's just
yes. Yes.
It's not to get anything.
Yes.
You know.
Yep.
I'm vulnerable here. I'm not trying to get anything. This is
right.
where I'm at.
Right.
I'm in pain right,
right
now. It's being that honest with people.
Exactly. Exactly. Because again, it gives a face for them to relate to.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like you don't have the answer.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get anything. This is where I'm at. I'm being stripped by it right now. I'm in a wilderness with God. It's that.
Yep. Yep. So, how then does God's confined voice get magnified? When we allow him to rip us open. And all of a sudden his voice becomes huge. But also when his royal priesthood, us, identify with others, which means dying to self, putting on Christ, and I relate to others with Christ's character, with hearts of compassion and kindness and humility and patience. In other words, I give more than what's fair, transformational living. Am I willing to let them see where I'm at? And then am I willing to meet them where they're at? Am I willing to see all of us as us? Because it's what Christ does. Even now with us, he's continually saying, yeah, I'm you, I'm you. I mean, think about that. Christ, God, the I am saying, yeah, I'm still willing to confine myself to you. I'm still willing to confine myself to a box with skin on it. Are you willing to let me open you up, to expand? That will be a bloody, messy life of grace. Being more than fair in order to give them a face they can relate to. Colossians 3. So as those who have been chosen by God as priests, as tabernacles, holy as tabernacles, and beloved, finally the marriage, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, and above all, put on love. Meet them where they're at. Not to give them a set of rules. Meet them with compassion and vulnerability. Take on their identity. Walk with them. Is this a different picture than what we normally have? It's not a doing, it is a allowing God to rip you open. so that you have blood splattered all over you from your own death to self. And then people say, oh, she's dying to self. I can die to self. I maybe we can do this together, which is the whole point
it's
of the kingdom.
Like people, I've heard people, I'm going to die to self today.
Which, yes.
It's almost, again, it's still in your control.
Right.
You're going to do something
right.
to die to self, whereas
right.
life already, it just does it to you.
Which is, God is all the time saying, hey, got an opportunity here for you
yeah.
to die to self. I've got an opportunity for you and me to become one. And you need to let go. You need to be a priest. So that a priest's job is not to be a level higher. It is to be, oh, I'm with you. I'm with you right there. There were a couple chapters after this that talked about the water, the oil, and the incense, which is, you know, a picture of God filling us so that when we allow ourselves to be the box and he fills us with everything we need to be the priest. He gives us the clothing. He gives us the bulls all the time, which is Christ's life. He gives us all that. But then the last chapter that we won't cover is chapter 31, which was Robin's favorite, talking about the Sabbath. And remember, he says, the Sabbath is for two things, for you to remember to rest, that I did the work. And he said also, the first thing is to remember that it is I who am sanctifying you. And the sanctifying is, I'm the one making you a tabernacle. I'm the one making you a priest. I'm the one giving you the ability to be transformational. If you try to do this, if you try to strive to do this, that's not Sabbath. Sabbath is, like Robin said, it's always remembering, always reflecting on, he has such compassion on me. He meets me where I'm at. Like, I am so ugly today. And he says, yeah, I'm not leaving you. I'm going to stay right here with you. That, recognizing what he's doing, the work he's doing, gives me the grace. I don't deserve it, but I'm able to be compassionate. I'm able to say, yeah, if this is messy, I'm going to stay right here with you. So the picture, the physical tangibleness of the tabernacle and the priest, was to begin to teach them that transformational relationship is a different way of living. It is that two becoming one so that we can be God to others. And this is a radical thing, even to, I think today, this is a radical thing for us to even think about, let alone receive. So I would ask that you really think about this week as to what that looks like in your life. What does it look like for you to allow God to be in you, but to explode you, to rip open you as the center? Because what it really looks like is relationship with other people of compassion mm-hmm. and kindness. That's what it looks like. It does not look like someone who follows the rules. That's not what a priest looks like. A priest is a messy, messy job. A job that is an absolute honor and a grace.
I think of like Mother Teresa, Brennan Manning, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's close. Father, I thank you that you have given us just, Lord, it is something that we cannot put into words, that we must experience, to know that you're willing to be confined within us. And for us to know that with you in us, that your whole desire is that we so much get exploded, that our self gets exploded out of us, and that you are seen. Father, I pray that we would each experience it this week. The filling of us in a place that we are empty, that ordainment that you have for us, and also your explosion out of us, that we become vulnerable and open and have a heart of compassion to be with those you put into our paths today. Give us ears to hear, give us hearts to receive. In Jesus' name, amen. Mm-hmm.